Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here, and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
My name is Clear. I'm 28 years old, and I work as a graphic designer in a small agency in Los Angeles. From the outside, my life seemed normal. Work, friends, occasional parties. But in the last few months, my life turned into something I could have never imagined. I want to tell you what happened, not to scare anyone, but so that you understand how someone who seems normal can hide an indescribable darkness. I met Lucas at a coffee shop downtown. He was an attractive guy with a charisma that caught. He was kind, attentive, and always attentive to the smallest details. At first, I thought I was lucky. My friends said he seemed too perfect, but I saw no reason to doubt. Maybe they wanted to ruin a good thing, I thought. Lucas and I started dating, and quickly our relationship became serious. It was intense, but in a good way, or so I thought at the time. He always wanted to be with me, to know my friends, to know everything I did. "I want to take care of you," he would say with a smile that disarmed me. But something started to feel off when my friends started complaining about strange messages they were receiving. Anonymous accounts writing them absurd things, invasive questions, veiled insults about me. Someone would ask them things like if they knew where I was or who was with me. At first, I ignored it. "The networks are full of weird people," I told myself. The frequency of those messages grew. My friends would show me screenshots. They were always new accounts with zero followers and generic names. The most disturbing thing was that these messages only reached the people closest to me. It was too specific to be a coincidence. One day, Alex, my best friend, planted himself in front of me after work. "Claire, this isn't a coincidence. It's Lucas." "Lucas? Don't be paranoid. He doesn't have time for that stuff." Alex sighed and pulled out his phone. "Look at this." He displayed a message from a recent account. "How's Claire? I saw you were with her yesterday. She doesn't look too good, does she?" It was weird, really weird. I confronted Lucas later that night. His reaction was total outrage. He looked at me like I'd stuck a knife in him. "Do you really think it's me?" I immediately felt guilty. He hugged me, almost desperate. "You have no idea how much I love you. I would never do anything like that." I believed him, or I wanted to believe him. But things didn't stop. These accounts kept popping up, the messages getting more and more personal. And then something happened that I couldn't ignore. I found one of those accounts open on his computer when he went to the bathroom. There was no excuse, no logical explanation. It was him. I waited for him to come out of the bathroom, sitting on the couch with his computer in front of me. When he returned, he looked at me, confused. "What's wrong?" I held up the laptop, showing him the screen with his anonymous account open. "Explain this to me, Lucas." His expression changed in a second. His gaze hardened as if a mask had fallen. "It's not what it looks like." But I wasn't listening to him anymore. I felt a mixture of anger and disgust. "How long have you been doing this? Answer me." Lucas tried to come closer, but I backed away. "Don't come closer." That set him off. His face contracted into an expression I'd never seen before. "This is how you repay me after all I've done for you?" Before I could react, he grabbed my arm and pushed me against the wall. Those are not your friends. You can't have friends. Don't you understand? You're a woman. Men don't want to be your friends. They just want to be with you. Have you gone crazy? Leave me alone. And your friends are just like them. They want to take you away from me. They want to see you alone. That's what a friend is? Do you think I read your messages? They want to separate us. They know I'm a good man. His strength took me by surprise. He pulled me into the room, closing the door behind us. You can't come out until we talk. As I looked for something to defend myself with, I noticed a glass vase in the corner of the room. I took advantage of an oversight of his. I grabbed the vase with both hands and smashed it against his head with all the force I had. Lucas fell to the floor, stunned. I didn't wait to see if he was okay. I ran out of the apartment and called the police. The police arrived quickly and took my statement. Lucas was arrested that same night, but they released him the next day. There is not enough evidence to hold him, they told me. I couldn't believe it. I changed the locks of my apartment, but I didn't feel safe. A few days later, my friends convinced me to go to a party. You need to distract yourself, Alex said. I agreed, even though I was still paranoid. During the party, I tried to relax. There was music, laughter, and people making everything seem normal again. My friends and I went outside and suddenly, we saw him. His car came speeding up and stopped us. My legs froze for a moment, but a friend grabbed my arm. Come on, Claire. Don't give the power. We walked together to her car, but Lucas suddenly got out of his car. In his right hand, he was holding something that glittered under the streetlights. It was a piece of broken glass. Lucas ran straight towards me, shouting something incomprehensible. Before I could react, Alex stopped between us. Lucas picked up the glass and used it as a weapon, trying to stab Alex. He managed to dodge the first few attacks, but Lucas was stronger than we expected. I saw Alex get a cut on his arm as I tried to hold him down. The whole thing was chaos. Lucas kept moving like a madman trying to get away. Alex was holding him back, but Lucas looked like a rabid animal. He just wanted to get to me and hit me even harder. That's when I heard the sirens. The police arrived just in time. The officers subdued Lucas as he continued to yell incoherent things. They handcuffed him and put him in the patrol car. Alex was hurt, but he insisted he was fine, even though he was injured. You have to make sure they keep him locked up this time. I went to the police station to give my statement. This time, the evidence was sufficient. The attack in the middle of the street, the gun in his hands, the witnesses. Lucas was prosecuted and received a conviction. I felt a strange mixture of relief and emptiness. 6 months have passed since that night. I moved apartments and am in therapy, trying to process everything I experienced. Alex is fine. The scar on his arm is a reminder of how close we came to disaster. He never came on to me and even went on to date another girl. My friends have been more supportive than I could have hoped. But there are days when I still look over my shoulder. Lucas was not a monster to the naked eye. He was a normal man, someone I trusted. That's the scariest thing of all. I learned that monsters don't always hide in shadows. Sometimes they're right in front of you, smiling. In this story, the names of the victims and some details of the story have been changed. However, we are allowed to show you the footage of the actual fight, when the victim's ex-boyfriend comes down to attack her with a screwdriver.
When Daniel wrote me, I hadn't heard from him in months. His message was brief, almost harmless. Can we please talk? The pleading tone turned my stomach. We'd broken up 4 months ago, after a fight that still appeared in my nightmares. He had yelled at me. He had pushed me. And though it didn't go any further, the fear I felt that night was enough for me to decide I never wanted to see him again. But time does strange things. Sometimes memory plays dirty. The good parts of the relationship, the happy days, the laughter, all of that started to come back to my mind. Besides, I still loved him, even if I hated to admit it. I replied with a dry, "Okay, but just to talk." We met at a restaurant downtown, a public place that gave me security, even though I knew agreeing to this meeting was a mistake. I kept telling myself it would just be a chat, nothing more. I needed to hear his apology, or at least that's what I told myself. Maybe I wanted to close the chapter for good, or maybe I was just looking for some excuse to justify my weakness. The date night came. I looked in the mirror before I left. There was a mixture of nerves and something else I didn't want to admit. I felt vulnerable, but also hopeful, although I didn't know exactly what I was pinning that hope on. Daniel arrived on time, as usual. He was well-dressed, clean, and with that smile that had won me over in the past. He hugged me as he greeted me, and although I accepted it, my body tensed. We sat at a table near the window. At first, everything was easy, light even. We talked about everyday things, work, family, his latest trips. While we were talking, the waiter arrived with the drinks. Handing me my glass, he smiled politely. I didn't do anything special. I just smiled back out of politeness. It was then that I noticed the first change in Daniel. Although he kept talking, his tone became colder, his answers shorter. I tried to pick up the conversation, but something in his gaze made me uncomfortable. It was fixed on me as if he was waiting for something. His smile, which at first was warm, now seemed calculated. I tried to ignore it, but the atmosphere between us had changed. Dinner continued in a kind of tense awkwardness. Daniel was still polite, but his mannerisms were different. Every time the waiter approached, his jaw tensed. I finished my plate as quickly as I could, wishing the night was over. When we left the restaurant, Daniel insisted on taking me home. I didn't have the heart to say no. We got into the car in silence. We barely exchanged words the entire ride. When we arrived, I offered to go up alone, but he suggested we walk a little further and take the stairs instead of the elevator. I agreed, even though my instincts told me not to. We walked to the door leading to the stairs. He opened it for me to go through first. As soon as I crossed the threshold, I felt him push me against the wall. His hands squeezed my shoulders with a force I didn't expect. "I can't believe what you did with that waiter." Daniel was terrifying. The problems I had with him were serious at the time, but now he was looking at me with a fury I didn't recognize. I tried to speak, but I couldn't breathe. His face was so close to mine that I could feel his hot breath. "I didn't do anything. I just smiled at him, Daniel. Nothing else. I was being polite." "As if I believe you. You left me to go with another guy, and I see you haven't changed. You're still such a tease. You do it on purpose, don't you? Is it some kind of revenge?" But my explanation didn't matter. Suddenly, he let go of me and, with a sudden movement, pushed me towards the stairs. I felt my body collapse, hitting each step as the world became a blur of pain. When I opened my eyes, I was on the landing between two floors. My head was buzzing and every part of my body ached. But before I could process what had happened, I saw it. Daniel was coming down the stairs with a knife in his hand. "I should never have called you. But I'm too good to you, you know? I've always been. Even now, after what you did, I'm willing to forgive you. Another man would have killed you by now." I tried to get up, but the pain was unbearable. "I never want to see you again," I screamed, hoping someone would hear me. But no one was coming. He began to pick up the pace, and fear gave me the strength I needed to stand up. I stumbled toward the stairs, grabbing the handrail to keep me from falling. My breathing was rapid and uncontrolled, and I could hear him behind me, his footsteps echoing in the stairwell. I reached my floor, almost crawling. I screamed at the top of my lungs as I searched for the keys to get into my apartment door, begging for someone to help me. For a moment, I thought I was safe. But when I looked back, I saw it. Daniel was holding a bunch of keys. Did you drop this? Stay calm. We're going to get into your house. But both of us. Daniel came walking towards me, ready to lock me in my own house and keep attacking me. But suddenly, we both heard a noise near us. The door of the neighboring apartment opened, and a man came out with a worried look on his face.
What's going on here?
Before I could explain, Daniel hit him with brutal force, knocking him unconscious. His head slammed against the wall and bounced like a ball. The noise attracted more neighbors, but their screams only seemed to enrage him more. He picked me up off the floor and began dragging me toward the stairs again. It was no longer safe for him to get me into my apartment.
Let me go. Help me. Somebody help me.
In the struggle, I managed to break free for an instant. I backed toward the edge of the stairs, but my foot slipped. Daniel tried to catch me, but in his attempt, he lost his balance. We both fell, rolling down the stairs. My body stopped at the first landing, but Daniel kept rolling to the next floor. A high-pitched scream escaped his lips as his leg twisted in an unnatural way. The scene was chaos. Neighbors screamed, and I could barely move. I lay on the floor crying as if lost. I didn't understand what was happening, but I couldn't hear Daniel, and that was good. I felt all the neighbors around me. Some seemed very worried. Others were looking for wounds on my head. After that, I just remember closing my eyes and falling asleep. I woke up in the hospital, my body covered with bandages and a police officer at my bedside. She informed me that Daniel was in custody and would face charges of attempted murder. Even today, I still find it hard to accept what happened. Every time I close my eyes, I relive that night. But there is one thing that gives me comfort. I know I will never see him again. The cameras on the stairs recorded everything that happened, and the neighbors were willing to testify on my behalf. Daniel will be locked up for a long time, and even if my body was destroyed for a very long time, I could live in peace. Sometimes I wonder if there were signs that I missed, things I should have noticed before. But the truth is that it doesn't matter anymore. The only thing that matters now is that I survived, and that I will never again let anyone do what Daniel did to me. This story is inspired by a real crime, but due to the violent nature and those involved in this story, the names of the victims and some details of the story have been changed. For this reason, we will only upload images of what happened. You can search for the video, but we warn you that it may affect the sensibility of those who watch it.
When you get to a certain age, you start to prioritize stability in relationships, but that tends to happen when we're adults. When I was young, I always liked intense relationships, until I met Megan. At first, everything was fascinating. Her laughter, her constant texting, the way she kept checking in on me. But over time, what seemed like affection started to feel like a string. If I went out with friends, she wanted to be there. If I didn't answer a message within minutes, she would call me 10 times. Her presence was like a shadow that wouldn't go away. When I finally decided to break it off, I promised myself that I was going to be firm. I wasn't willing to live under her control anymore. The breakup was a disaster. Megan cried, screamed, and accused me of 1,000 things. I tried to explain to her that it wasn't about someone else. I just couldn't deal with her jealousy and obsession anymore. She wouldn't listen.
You can't leave me like this,
she told me, her voice trembling between anger and despair. I thought she would eventually calm down, but she didn't. Over the next few days, I noticed her presence in places she shouldn't be. If I left work, there was her car parked a few blocks away. If I went to the gym, I saw her walking nearby. One night I even thought I heard footsteps in the alley next to my apartment, but when I looked out the window, I saw nothing. I kept telling myself it was paranoia. She couldn't be following me, could she? I began to ignore the texts and calls she was still sending me. I figured if I didn't pay attention to her, she'd eventually get tired. But Megan wasn't the type to tire easily. Over the weekend, I decided to go out with some friends. I needed to distract myself, and more importantly, prove to myself that I could get on with my life without Megan in it. We went to a restaurant on the outskirts of town. It was a quiet place with good food and room to chat. We laughed a lot, and for the first time in days, I felt more relaxed. As I pulled out into the parking lot, I noticed something strange about my car. As I approached, I saw Megan. She was leaning over the hood, her arm waving frantically. It took me a few seconds to realize she was scratching the paint with a piece of broken glass. Her movements were chaotic, almost frantic, and her face was twisted in a mixture of fury and pleasure. "Megan, what the hell are you doing?" She looked up, her expression not changing one bit. It was still that terrifying mixture of pent-up rage and some sort of twisted satisfaction.
"I'm teaching you a lesson, love. You need to learn that if someone talks to you, it's only polite to talk back."
I kept moving forward, but when I tried to open the door to get in, she pointed the glass at me.
"Don't even think about it. If you get in, I'll cut you."
I froze for a moment, but then I pulled out my phone. If I was going to act this way, I needed proof. I started recording while she kept scratching at the car, yelling things that barely made sense, that I was a liar, that all my friends I came with were facile and desperate, and that no one was going to love me as she did. Suddenly, she stopped talking. She noticed that I was recording her. Her face changed, and in the blink of an eye, she lunged at me with a glass in her hand. I barely had time to drop the phone and turn away.
"Megan, calm down!"
But she wasn't listening. I didn't know if she would run or try to confront me again. Then she just stopped. Her breathing was heavy, her eyes locked on me as if she was evaluating what to do. And then, she began to chase me. I could have calmly knocked her down, but something could have gone wrong. With the sharp object she had, either of us could end up dead. I decided to run away from her as fast as I could. After a few meters, I turned around and she was gone. She never chased me. She must have stopped when I started to run. I stood there, my heart hammering in my chest. I went back to the parking lot and stared at the mess I had left in my car. The glass was still on the ground and the phone was still recording. The adrenaline wasn't letting me think clearly. I got in the car, locked the doors, and forced myself to take a deep breath. I just wanted to go home. The drive home was quiet. The streets were empty and there was hardly any traffic. I tried to concentrate on driving, but my mind kept wandering. What was someone like Megan doing, hiding in a restaurant parking lot, scratching my car? How far was I willing to go? I had to report her as soon as possible. A thud behind me interrupted my thoughts. Something had fallen or moved in the back seat. I looked in the rearview mirror, but saw nothing. Suddenly, something cold and sharp brushed against my neck. I turned my head just in time to see Megan emerging from between the back seats, the same glass in her hand. I screamed and turned the steering wheel, instinctively causing the car to skid. Megan was screaming something, but panic prevented me from understanding her. She had never run away. She had hidden in the back of my car. I forgot I had left it unlocked when she threatened me. The car lurched, and in a desperate move, I tried to pry the glass out of her hands. We struggled, my hands trying to push hers away as she tried to stab me from behind. The uncontrolled struggle ended when the car left the road and hit a pole. I don't remember much of it. Just the sound of metal twisting, the pop of glass, and then silence. My head hit the steering wheel and everything went black. When I came to, I was surrounded by lights. Ambulances, policemen, people talking at full speed. My body ached all over, and my vision was blurred. The first thing I asked was, "Where is Megan?" A paramedic looked at me in confusion. "Who?" I tried to explain what had happened, but everyone seemed more concerned with getting me out of the car and making sure I had no serious injuries. Someone mentioned that witnesses had seen a woman running from the scene after the crash, but no one knew who she was or where she had gone. At the hospital, policemen came to take my statement. I told them everything. From the days Megan was following me to the attack in the car, they seemed to listen with interest, but there was a lack of urgency in their attitude.
She's a danger! You have to find her!
One of them assured me they would, but there was something in their tone that didn't convince me. Days passed, and there was no word from Megan. They reviewed the recordings from the parking lot, but everything was a blur. My phone, which had been left in the car during the crash, was damaged, but they were able to retrieve the video and see the evidence of what I said. Obviously, I reported her, but when they went to look for her at her house, they couldn't find her. Nobody knew anything about her. Weeks after the incident, I tried to move on with my life. I moved to another apartment, changed cars, and tried to forget about Megan. But something still didn't feel right. Every time I went out, I had the feeling that someone was watching me. One day, I found an envelope in the mailbox. It had no return address. When I opened it, there was a picture of me in the hospital taken from the window.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today for 10% off your first month.
On the back, written in red ink, there was only one word. Always. Since then, there's not a day that goes by that I don't look over my shoulder. I know Megan is still there, obsessed with me, and I won't be able to meet anyone or go out with friends feeling safe until I know she's already forgotten about me.
You think I care?
I don't care anymore!
Quit hitting me.
I've lost my mind!
Quit hitting me.